Okay, so, I mean, I'm looking at the list. I don't, like, have any really strong feelings about anything this week, to be honest. What are your thoughts?
Nothing more than feelings.
Yes. As soon as you're done gasping, I'll start.
I'm not gasping. Well, I have a cold, so, you know, it's...
Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Friday, April 27th, 2018. It's just after 3:30 UTC as we're starting to record this today. I'm Sam Minter, and Yvonne Bo is back with us today. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello. So, Sam says I'm gasping. I'm not... gasping as much as I don't know. At some point, I think I started feeling a little bit of it on Saturday. I must have picked up a cold somewhere. Uh-huh. I don't know where. Who the hell knows where? Could have been anywhere. You know, literally.
Because you've been everywhere.
But yeah, basically. And so I don't know. I just, but it didn't, I mean, for whatever reason, it felt okay. And then it was like really. I mean, I was feeling relatively fine until today. I will say today has been miserable. A headache. I mean, I don't know. really, last night, a lot of coughing. That's where really when it started. It was more like last night. And I just my voice, I don't know. It's been a little bit.
Lovely. Yeah, my I've been mostly okay, but my son Alex's allergies have been really getting to him this week. His asthma has been really bad all week long. He's basically missed school all week, and so it's you know, and it's one of those things where, you know, it's off and on. Like he'll be really bad overnight, but there'll be a short period of time in the morning where he's kind of okay. And it's sort of do we take him to school? Do we not take him to school? And he's right on the edge. And then, like, and then you decide, okay, he's not. But then a couple hours later, he's mostly okay. And you're like, oh, damn it, he could have gone to school. And then an hour after that, he's bad again. So whatever, you know?
Well, I don't know. I do for my son daily respiratory therapy every night to be, you know, for asthma.
Yeah, Alex isn't that bad, but we have.
Well, no, it's not that he's that bad. It's just that we're doing it preventively, because if we don't, then he winds up. So we're actually, I mean, he's basically on medication every day.
Yeah,
it's just, you know, I mean, we've tried it the other way, and all, you know, we've tried every other way we tried has been a disaster. And so, fuck it. He's on medication every day.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on medication every day for my asthma, but Alex hasn't been at that point yet. This week's been so bad though. We might do something like that. But and he's been prescribed some maintenance stuff. Yeah. But he resists taking it. Like, he'll take it when he feels like he needs it. But taking things like, you know, you just singular. Take this every day, no matter what, he resists the hell out of that. So it's hard.
Well, of course, that's why he's like that. I freaking make sure. I'm like, you see.
Well yeah. I mean, and normally it's
the
not.
The battle between me and my son taking a medicine that I know he needs to take, it's like, I'm winning.
Well, it's. Normally he doesn't. Need that. Like, normally he's fine, but like right now it's like in the Pacific Northwest where we are right now, it's like I think right at the point where, like, pollen's all hitting and all the crap is happening.
God, yeah, you know? It's gotta be brutal. Yeah.
So it's like certain times a year are really bad, right? You know, that's how allergies work. So
yeah. This is like a really bad time. I mean, I'm usually on my allergy meds right now every day, so
yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. Like the thing is, and in certain medicines that like come in pills, and those like are a real challenge because like he doesn't want them, and like he's fine with chewables, but like the kind that isn't chewable and you just have to take, he's gotten wise to all of our ways to trick those into him.
Well, I will say that, look, I'm a little bit leery about giving my son pills to chew. So usually, even if whatever, I'll mash them up and I'll give them to him in a little syringe, like with a little liquid. And so the thing is that I did try one. Look, I think he's big enough to start chewing them, but he's been so used to taking them that way that I haven't like changed the method. But look, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, or a month or two, I don't know, the last 2 months tops. So I go and he takes his vitamin every day, and it's a chewable vitamin. And I said, well, you know, I used to mash it up and give it to him like in a little syringe, but I'm like, come on, he could chew this thing, right? So I went to say, Manu, will you chew this thing? First thing he said, no. And I'm like, look, come on, let's give this a try. Come on. So all of a sudden, I thought, I'm going to have to try to jam this thing in his mouth so he could try it. Before I even got the chance, he grabbed the damn thing, and it was a chewable one, okay, all right, and flung it into his mouth and swallowed it without chewing.
Okay.
Yeah, no, not okay. It really bothered the shit out of him, and he was, like, crying for the next 45 minutes. I got dressed down by my wife because I had even, like, asked her to see start doing this, and then she's like, Why the hell did you do that? I thought I was just going to expose him to the pill to see if he would like try to chew it. I didn't think the son of a bitch is just going to take the damn thing and just pop it down into his
down the hatch. The thing is that this is what you had was an actual chewable, which you're supposed to chew, which is usually a little bit bigger.
The ones that are meant for you to swallow
are generally smaller.
Right. So that one was really, you really needed to chew that thing. That thing was pretty damn big. And he just went and like swallowed it. Not one chew. And it did not go down that pipe very well.
Lovely.
And I got yelled at. I got a crying kid on one end, and then I'm being yelled at on the other end. It was not a good scenario. So I haven't tried that again.
So anyway, everybody, agenda-wise, you can already probably tell we're just sort of rambling here. And the reason is this is another week where we don't have, like, the one or two really, really big things that are standing out. Now that
in normal times, maybe this stuff would be big. I mean, you know, you have the withdrawal of a VA, a cabinet nominee. You have, we had a couple of shooting. We had a shooting. We had the guy with the van, the truck in Toronto, mow over people.
Yeah.
Oh, and then I don't know if you saw in the news, there was a school shooting in somewhere in northern Florida recently. I don't know if you saw that.
I actually didn't.
Okay, well, there was that's what it's come down to now, really. People aren't even fazed by it. But my cousin's daughter actually went to that school where school shooting happened, and it was lucky that she actually did not go to school that day because she was going to a competition.
Right. So anyway, my point is, though, that we have a whole bunch of things, but no big concepts. So you guys know what that means. That means we're going to go lightning round again on this show. Right, Yvonne?
Why lightning round?
Because lightning is fast. And it means each topic we'll talk about just for a few minutes each and then move on to the next topic. That's what we mean by lightning.
Waffle House shooting.
Yes, that's one of the items.
Yes.
Okay, are you picking the first topic? Are we starting with the Waffle House shooting? So I should mention as well.
Kids and devices.
Okay. I should mention as well that my wife and my daughter are in another state for a wedding right now.
Oh.
So it's just Alex and I in the house for like 5 days.
Mm-hmm. That'll be interesting.
We do fine. Right, Alex? Okay, that's not fine. Okay.
Let me talk.
Dude.
Let me talk.
You got 3 minutes. Talk all you want, get it out of your system, and then you have to be quiet the rest of the show.
So.
Starting a timer.
So, first topic. There was a Waffle House shooting in Canada, and yeah, and in a Waffle House, everyone kept on saying, nothing better than a pancake house instead of a Waffle House. It was very strange. So someone got really, really mad and came up and shot everyone.
Okay.
And...
this sounds interesting.
And, yeah, most of the people were really injured. And some people got out of there in time. And some people died. Nor the people who died. Nor the part with... you know what I mean. And the shooter immediately ran to a pancake house.
Okay.
Because everyone was talking about pancake houses. And in the pancake house, they were talking about the Waffle House shooting. So he got mad and shot in the pancake house.
Okay.
And that's all the news we got.
Okay.
Very good.
Oh, wait. I just found some more news.
Okay, you got 1 minute, 23 seconds shooting. Left.
So, the person escaped and got onto a plane and snuck onto a plane. And then got out of their seat and shot everyone on the plane. And took control over the plane.
That's lovely.
And crashed it into the ocean.
Well, that's the first. Well, that's some breaking news, I guess.
Apparently.
Okay.
I don't know how that happened, but it did.
Well, when you get the details, are you going to put it on your? Are you going to put the details on your YouTube channel when you get them? Will you play a video?
30 seconds left.
Oh no. Oh, that's good. Closer to playtime. And, yeah, so... it's really, really good. And, yeah, it was actually really bad. So that was the Waffle House shooting topic.
Okay, thank you very much, Alex. We'll talk to you later.
Wait, then radar. Oh.
There it is.
Never mind. Next topic.
No. That's it for you.
Next topic. Move to the next topic.
Well, I'll start it up again once you're set up somewhere else.
I already did the Waffle House shooting topic.
Yes.
So,
okay.
Do the next one.
Okay, come on. Let's get you set up. And with that, let's take a break. And when we come back, we will start our lightning round proper, going back and forth between Yvonne and I. Back after this.
You're in The Valley, AM 1620, and LiganAirRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Come on, baby. Let's do the twist.
Well, they got a new dance, and it goes like this.
Classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LiganAirRadio.com, The Valley.
Okay, we are back. So, Yvonne, why don't you do the first topic? Pick a topic and let's go.
Okay. So, Cosby's going to jail. You know.
Yes.
You know, we've had all this Me Too stuff. Look, I got it. I completely believe, and I'm, you know, based on everything that's come out, that definitely Cosby is guilty. There's no doubt about it. It's, 100%.
Yeah. I mean, there's more than enough evidence built up over decades.
Yeah. I don't doubt that. I still get this tinge of just sadness about the fact that this is where Bill Cosby is winding up.
Yeah.
It's not because I don't believe he deserves what's happening.
Well, it's the contrast between what his public image was when we were kids in the 80s.
Our commencement speech.
Oh, did he? I forgot that.
Yes, he did, you idiot.
But you know, this was Dr. Huxtable, right? This was the guy on Fat Albert. This was the guy in the Jell-O Pudding Pop commercials, you know?
Yeah.
It's the contrast between that image and what apparently was the reality all along. And that's what we're mourning. I mean, what you're sad about and what you're mourning is because you had this image of this man as a really good person you could look up to.
Yeah.
And then it turns out that was never true.
And it really kills me.
You know, someone had one of these threads back. I don't know when the Me Too stuff was going strong on sort of which person, if it turned out, was doing all this kind of stuff, would it really devastate you? I mean, but we already knew about Cosby at that point, but new names were coming out every day. And so, you know, people were suggesting various names. Oh, my God, if it was this person, if it was that person. And, you know, and I don't know. I mean, the first person that comes to my mind is, you know, Mr. Rogers or something, you know.
Oh, God, yes. Jesus Christ. Oh, my God. Yes, that would be horrible.
You know, and so far, as I know, nothing even remotely like that has ever come out about Mr. Rogers.
It would be devastating if that game. There is nothing of the sort we know about Mr. Rogers.
Yeah. But I don't know. And the thing is also, the thing with Cosby is you also get some degree of sympathy with, like, well, you know, he's old now. His health isn't good. He's like,
in terms of him getting punished, I don't give two shits about that. I mean, you know, he did, you know, what he did, and there are consequences to what you do, and it doesn't matter what age you are. I mean, it is what it is. I mean,
they haven't had the sentencing yet, and he is going to appeal, and so it's not over yet. You know, he may well die of natural causes before it's over. I mean, this is going to be in courts for a while yet.
I mean, it's just like I said, I mean, the whole thing is just, yeah. I mean, that was somebody that I, you know, took as an example of how, you know, how they treated people and what they did in the public persona.
Well, the other one I saw today was Tom Brokaw.
What?
With harassing women at NBC.
Oh, get out. No.
Yeah.
Don't tell me that. What? What came up?
I just saw his name let me look it up real quick. Okay. Here's from the Daily Mail in the UK, April 26th. The headline, he grabbed me behind my neck and tried to force me to kiss him. Legendary anchor Tom Brokaw is accused of sexual harassment by NBC war correspondent and other female staffer, claims he forced her hands under his shirt. Tom Brokaw, 78, accused of sexual misconduct by two women. Former NBC correspondent Linda Vester claimed he made unwanted advances. The alleged incidents occurred in the 1990s. Anyway, and he denies it.
Oh, God. Well, the one thing, you know, outside of that, talking about this subject, the Me Too thing. So did you yesterday posted this? Yes. I mean, who the hell came up? Okay, so if not, you guys didn't hear, so yesterday came out of the news that they wanted to put Charlie Rose in some kind of like an interview show where he was interviewing other sexual harassers.
So basically, Charlie Rose was kicked off his show for inappropriate sexual harassment type of content. And so they want to give him an interview show to talk about other men, talk with other men,
other men
whose careers have also been ended by the Me Too
movement. Like Matt Lauer and all those. This shit, it's like, the fuck? It's like, I was thinking, let's have the Manson like interview other like serial killers or something. I don't know. What the fuck is this? You know, it's just, yeah. Whoever came up with the
idea. I'm pretty sure that whatever plans they had for this probably did not survive the fact that it was leaked that it was going on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. The reaction was like beyond like, you know, revulsion. What anybody just heard. I don't think anybody who heard it was like, oh, yeah, great idea. Everybody that heard it was like, what the fuck? That was the universal reaction to that one. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. So,
that was me.
That was you. Yeah. So, my turn. I might as well throw this out there. I finished a book a while back. Are you excited? We talked a few weeks ago about how I was trying to make sure I read a little bit more. Okay, so the book I finished was a 2013 mystery book called The Man from Berlin by Luke McCallan. And I'd mentioned on a show when I was talking about wanting to read more that it was set in Nazi Germany. I was actually not quite 100% right there. It is set in Nazi-occupied Yugoslavia during World War II.
Definitely not the same countries.
Not the same country. But the thing is, it's all about Nazis. Like, the person who is your character, who's trying to solve the mystery, is in the German military police, essentially. During World War II. So, you know, every character in this book practically is a Nazi, and it's a little murder mystery. And it does end up, having some intersection with some of the resistance and some people who the Nazis are fighting against. But it's interesting, the setting of it, because the whole time you're thinking, okay, I'm doing this murder mystery and the main character is a Nazi. How's this going to play out in a way that doesn't leave me feeling really bad about reading this? But it satisfies that kind of thing in the end. And it tries to be very much about the place and the time. So like you're in Yugoslavia while it's occupied by the Nazis, you've got the war going on, you've got all kinds of factions that aren't just, Axis and Allies or whatever, but also all these local things inside Yugoslavia going on. And you follow this guy as he fights his own demons at the same time as he's trying to figure out who killed this person and all of this stuff. I mean, mystery novels aren't my mainstay. Like, it's not one of the things that I'm really into, but I'm trying to, like, make sure I get a variety of different genres in my reading. And it was okay. It was okay. I will probably read the sequel. It was interesting. I found it mostly interesting, not for the murder mystery itself, but for the geographic background and historical background that it was set inside of. So to me, it was less about, oh, let's figure out who killed this woman at the beginning of the book, but more about just, oh, this is going on inside, the German army while they're in Yugoslavia. during World War II. This is an interesting perspective that I haven't thought or heard about much. And
was this fiction or is this fictionalized or is it, this is a true story?
No, complete fiction. This is just,
okay, all right.
It's just a murder mystery.
Okay. Yeah.
It's just the setting of that. So
okay.
So, you know, like I said, I found it interesting because of the historical context and the fact that there'd obviously been a bunch of research about, well, what exactly was going on in what place at what time during this period and how would people talk about things and interact and, you know, how did the various different parts of the German military interact with each other and all of this kind of stuff. So I found it interesting. You know, in terms of recommendations, I think, you know, I've been trying to simplify this to thumbs up, thumbs down, or sideways. I'd give this a sideways. It was okay. It was fine. I did not mind the read, but it wasn't like, oh my God, this was an amazing book that I want to, you know, keep track of. And this was most of this book was before I tried to reaccelerate my reading. And so I just want to give you what that meant, because most of the time I was not reading this book because I was getting distracted by Trump and everything else and watching, reading Twitter and stuff instead. And I only accelerated and decided, okay, I'm going to finish this damn book. In March, maybe. So it took me 310 days to read this 436 page book. So that is an average of about 1.5 pages per day over that time period.
That's pretty bad.
So, you know, so the reality of that is I would go weeks and weeks and weeks without reading anything. And then I'd read like 5 or 10 pages. And then I'd go weeks and weeks and weeks without reading anything at all. And then in March, I was like, okay, I'm going to finish this book. And then I just finished the rest up. But and that's sort of my pace that I was going at. The book I finished before that, it took me, I was going less than one page per day for the book before that. And this is the problem I was calling out. I'm like, okay, if I'm going to, I'm none of this pretending and I read a page and then wait a month and then read another page. That's nonsense.
You know, that's the reason why I haven't read books lately. I would be getting to bed and I was basically reading literally. I know you weren't reading a page a day, but I literally like read a page or two and then I'll fall asleep.
Yeah. Well, and see what I've been doing. I've been succeeding so far in that I have been every night before I go to bed reading at least a chunk, like usually a 10 or 15 minute segment of the book and before going to sleep. And then I've been consistently, unless there was something really huge blowing up in the news, on my commute home from work, I'd be listening to an audiobook rather than, you know, podcasts or live news or whatever. So I've been making progress on a couple of other books. I haven't finished yet, but I'm making decent progress, and I feel like I'm reading and getting something out of that, which is cool. But this one, again, I'd give it a thumb sideways. It's not really as bad as 1.5 pages per day average over 310 days would imply. It's just that most of that 310 days, I wasn't actually reading the book. I just, you know, nominally that was the book I was reading, but I wasn't really picking up the book and reading pages on a regular basis until March, when I picked it up and finished it in a much shorter period of time. That's it. That was mine. Your turn again.
My turn again. Dr. Ronnie Jackson. I mean, okay, so I guess Trump just decided one day, just name him, right? Had done no vetting of the guy whatsoever, found out nothing about him.
He liked him, Yvonne. What else would you need? He liked the man. And the man gave a good answer for how much he weighed.
That's true. That's true. He definitely had that going for him. And, what the hell, man? I mean, the guy's just – I mean, the – the amount and volume of reports on this guy is just brutal. Now,
the question becomes, why the hell, let's be clear.
Wait,
before we go there, just be clear. The initial reports on this guy, when we first heard his name, when he was doing the Donald Trump, you know, checkup, was from all sorts of people from the previous two administrations that he'd worked in were like, he's a really great guy. He's upstanding. We like him. We trust him. He's a wonderful doctor.
Yeah.
That's what we heard over and over again. And, you know, so people who, you know, and that came up in this whole Gerther debate and whether or not this weight was true and all this. They're like, look, he's a good doctor. He's a good. And there were bipartisan people from both the Obama and I believe the George W. Bush administration as well. Talking about how great he was, but and that continued when he was nominated for being the head of the VA. You also had those same people coming out and saying, yeah, he's a good guy. But then they added, but he doesn't have any administrative or management experience. I don't think he's the right fit for this guy, for this job. Donald Trump is doing him a misservice because, you know, he's nominating something to. You know, he's a great doctor, but he's not qualified to do this. And that was the line for a couple weeks. And then just in the last few days.
And that's all I expected, really, to be honest with you, that maybe, you know, the guy may not have the right qualifications for it. I didn't think that any of this was going to come out.
Right. Well, what happened in the last few days, really, is all of those previous comments were from people who'd been his patients. The people who started talking in the last few days were people who were his peers and coworkers on the medical side. And they started to say, let's see, what are the highlights? The biggest highlights are that he was.
Well, I heard once that he was on a trip that he got drunk and was like at one of his. But was banging in the hotel room with somebody that they were working with on the trip. That was one.
I don't remember that one. What I remember yes, he had a drinking problem, including drinking on the job. And apparently at one event, he crashed a government car.
Yep.
While drinking, I guess.
Yeah.
Sam from the future here. Of course, the doctor denies all this, but that particular bit about the car and a few other things, the Secret Service has also come and said, that's not true. So, I don't know. And then the other one was being, let's say, very, very loose with prescribing things.
Yes.
He was known as the candy man, apparently, because he would give pills out like candy. And basically, if you wanted, you know, pick your drug, he would just be like, okay, that's fine, here you go. In terms of prescription drugs, obviously. And so a lot of this was like Ambien and the other drug that sort of counteracts Ambien, whatever that was, and I guess a few others. But basically that's what's being talked about now. And, you know, I guess I responded with, I guess that's why all his patients really liked
him. Really liked him, right.
But yeah, as you pointed out, this does start to bring up the question of, okay, well, he was the doctor for, you know, these previous administrations. You know, what else was going on there? Was he actually doing a good service for Obama and George W. and for their staffs? Because the White House doctor doesn't just treat the president; it's also the White House staff. You know, if all this was going on, what? Were they actually getting the correct care they should have been? So apparently, look, that in the end, he withdrew his nomination when all this came up. Donald Trump came on TV and basically said, well, you know, I'll stand by him. But if I was him, I don't know why he'd put up with this. And of course, just to be fair, I'll also put out, he denies all this. He says it's not true.
Right. Yes, he has denied all of it. Yeah.
But in the end, what you see is this pattern. Regardless of what this man did, and he may have done a lot of things, but you're seeing this consistent pattern of people who work in the Trump administration who go in with relatively good reputations, come out with their reputations destroyed. Now, some of that is Donald Trump's fault. If this guy is guilty of all this, it's not really Donald Trump's fault other than for nominating the man. But What a mess. And again, it comes down to vetting and everything else, because there is none. It's all about Donald Trump. Totally. Is like, I like this guy. Here you go. Want a cabinet position?
Yeah. There we go. But he wouldn't give one to Cohen, though. Apparently. So.
Yeah.
Okay. So Ronnie is bye-bye. Okay. Right. No more Ronnie. At least, well, no more Ronnie for VA. We don't know what that.
Well, is he going to leave the White House doctor position at this point?
Not that I've heard of right now. So,
yeah. Well, given everything that's been alleged, you know, we'll
see if that also happens. But it hasn't happened yet.
You know what's going to happen though if that happens?
What?
You know that chess master looking guy from the campaign.
Oh, he's Borenstein. Dr.
Trump's got to bring him in, right?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He'll be made an admiral immediately.
Well, he doesn't have to name him an admiral, but he could make him the White House doctor.
But I think the they have to be an admiral or some sort of title like that or something.
Do they?
I think so.
Okay, well, make him Surgeon General then.
Yeah, exactly. Surgeon General gets some kind of admiral title or something, right? Well,
Surgeon General is the title is general. It's in the name, but it's not the same as being an actual general.
No, but they have like so I was reading this about this recently.
And of course, and we're not talking about the Surgeon General anyway. I just brought that up. We're talking about the White House doctor.
But now that you what the hell? Damn it. No, here it is. The Surgeon General reports to the Assistant Secretary, who may be a 4-star admiral in the commissioned corps. Okay?
Well, you're talking Surgeon General now.
Yes. Okay, so yeah, but you told
And are
me,
they no, required
it's a general.
To...
No, it's not a general. For some reason, it's a 4-star admiral. I don't know why.
Wait, the Surgeon General is an admiral.
Yes.
But they don't have to be an admiral before they were appointed to Surgeon General.
I don't think so.
No. And the White House physician, by the way, does not appear to have any such requirements either.
Okay. There you go. You can make it an admiral.
Although it looks like traditionally they are military, but they don't have to be, I don't think. Yeah. I don't know. Do you really want to read the Wikipedia page right now?
No. Really, but I'm
looking at the physician to the president Wikipedia page, and I'm already getting horribly bored.
All right, okay, we are okay. All right, well, we're done for that.
Okay.
I was just figured that if they buy Borstein or whatever Jorstein or whatever the crazy guy, an admiral, that would be kind of cool.
Well, or maybe put him in charge of health and human services or something.
No, just White House physician. I mean, I don't, just let them be treated by that psychopath. I mean, that's fine. I don't care, whatever. You know, it's all right. If it's, anyway. All right, so we're done with that. Next.
By the way, lots of White House physicians have not been military. I'm just looking at the list.
Nope.
Okay. My next topic is Sesta Fosta, which is a bill.
It's
a pasta dish.
Which is a bill that passed the Congress by overwhelming bipartisan majorities and was signed into law by Donald Trump a few weeks ago. Have you heard of this, Yvonne?
I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about.
So this is a law whose intended purpose is to fight sex trafficking. But here's the thing. And this is why it passed with bipartisan majorities, is nobody wants to say they're for sex trafficking, right?
Well, I don't know about that. You're talking about Trump.
Okay, fine. So it passed with wide bipartisan majorities because nobody wants to appear to be against that. But it is incredibly broad. And the people who actually are, really deeply, intimately knowing, the space, say it's probably not really going to help sex trafficking, but it does a lot of things to push sex workers of all kinds into further back into the illegal background, and specifically things like this has resulted in a shutdown of Backpage, which was a classified ad site that sort of specialized in, you know, if you wanted to advertise to some particular sexual proclivity that you wanted to do. And it is a place where, you know, sex workers could advertise their wares, basically, and hook up with people who wanted to buy their services. Craigslist eliminated their adult section and all kinds of stuff like this. And it criminalizes all kinds of additional behavior or advocacy work. So basically,
was that law used? I saw that they seized Backpage.com, yes, like recently.
Exactly.
That law's used for, okay.
Yes,
all right.
Exactly. And so the what organizations of sex workers have been lobbying against this, saying like, look, sex trafficking is certainly a real problem where people are forced against their will into this industry. However, there are a lot of adults who know exactly what they're doing and want to be in that industry, or even if they would rather be doing something else, these services like Backpage and Craigslist and things like that allowed them to do what they do in a much safer way, where they could act independently. They wouldn't be subject to pimps, and they wouldn't have to be on the street and take, you know, whatever random people walked by and were into them. They could do background checks, they could process things online, and it acted as an extra layer of safety that making all of those kinds of things illegal takes that away. And their point, and I think they're very likely quite right about this, is that the end result of this law is not going to be to protect the people who really and truly are victims of sex trafficking. It's going to take this other layer of sex workers and drive them underground into a much more dangerous position than they were before. And the net result is going to be a lot of people hurt or killed, as opposed to actually doing what this law intended, which was, you know, help the situation where you have, you know, a teenage runaway who gets kidnapped and forced into being an underage prostitute. That's what it's supposed to help with. Because of the way it's actually framed and written, it looks like it'll actually do almost nothing for those kinds of people. And in the meantime, it's going to hurt a lot of other people.
Yeah. Okay.
So, it's one of those things where, you know, I've said before, the laws that you really have to be most wary of are the ones where the Republicans and Democrats just sort of agree and say, okay, this sounds like a great idea, let's all sign it and blah, 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 because they tend to be very badly thought out have a lot of unintended consequences. And this seems to be just the latest example of that kind of thing, where because it's not a well-fought battle between two sides advocating their positions in a forceful way and resulting in some sort of final compromise or whatever, it doesn't get the level of scrutiny that it should. And so, therefore, it's very easy to ram through things that end up causing all kinds of problems you don't necessarily expect when you, as most of the Congress people who signed this, probably didn't think very deeply about it. They're just like, oh, bill to help combat sex trafficking. Sounds good. Sign.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. You know, they present that. I mean, if I didn't read any of it, yeah.
Yeah. And of course, some people would argue that, you know, well, our job isn't to protect the sex workers and make their lives more, you know, we would rather have them be, you know, in the shadows, even if more of them get killed, because they shouldn't be able to advertise their services in public and whatever, you know. But I tend to look at all of these kinds of things in a, you know, harm reduction sort of way, where, you know, like, first of all, I don't have any sort of moral objection to sex work in the first place, if it's all consensual and everybody's doing what they And, you know, the consent part is the important part to
yes,
me. That's the
that
only
is, that
part.
That is correct. Yes.
You know, it's as long as nobody there is acting against their will, there's no coercion, there's no the then let adults do what adults want to do. And if they want to exchange money, so be it.
Right.
But even assuming that you thought this was bad and shouldn't be happening, you know, making something illegal isn't necessarily the way to solve the problem. You want to take
well, it's been shown very much in Europe. I mean, there are countries like in Spain, for example, has not just legalized prostitution, but they also have a lot of worker protections for them. And so that kind of stuff that happens in terms of sex trafficking and whatever, it happens. It's a lot safer for everybody in the
because it's regulated, because
because they can go to the police when anything happens, because they're not in fear of anything or so forth. If they see trafficking, see something like that, it can be easily identified and they can go after it. I just think that that's just the best approach to manage that. I mean, you know, and that way, if somebody you know, anybody decides that they want to be in the sex work, whether male or female or whatever, they don't feel like you know, all of a sudden they have to be under the thumb of somebody who is going to force them into doing something in some way. You know, I just think it's
yeah, like you said. And the key to me is, like, if there's a negative thing that you want to drive down, then you want to be very specific about what that is, and then you can experiment and do trial and error. So, like, to me, in this kind of area, I want to reduce the number of people who are exploited against their will, reduce the number of people who are dying, et cetera.
Yep.
And let's measure that and see which is the most effective way to do that. And my guess is driving it all underground and making it illegal isn't going to solve that.
Not particularly.
Maybe I'm wrong and you could measure it and find that out, but I think you're right. From places we've observed with different policies, that doesn't seem to be the way that minimizes that. And frankly, even if your goal was minimize the amount of prostitution happening in the world, I'm not convinced this is the way to do it. Anyway, and you, of course, you can have similar arguments on anything that you make illegal. And sometimes making it illegal does have the deterrent effect you want and reduces the numbers. Sometimes it doesn't. I don't think there's a universal law there. Like, you know, do less murders happen if murder is illegal? You know, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, if you could just get away with it freely, maybe there'd be more murders. You know, marijuana prohibition. What's the argument there? Guns. We've talked about guns. I think they're all ones that you have to look at differently. But the key is you want to identify what's the thing you're really trying to minimize, measure that, and then do trial and error or watch what different countries have done and see what works and what doesn't in order to bring that metric to where you want it to be. You know, and wherever we get dogmatic about, you know, oh, this is evil, it must be illegal, it must be banned no matter what, then you're losing that thread. Whether it's prostitution or guns or marijuana or anything else, figure out what you're talking about and what you actually want to minimize, and then go from there.
Right.
Okay, that's me. Let's take a break.
Woo!
And then we'll come back with another lightning round. Back after this.
Ready for the test, Dracula? I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, we are back, and Yvonne, it is your turn again.
It is.
Yes.
Oh, boy. I'm going through the topics, Okay. So, Cohen takes the fifth.
Well, he's announced he will if asked about anything.
Well, he's filed a document saying so.
Yeah, he's filed the document of his intention to plead the fifth on any questions related to Stormy Daniels.
And Trump basically said that, let's see, Trump claimed that Cohen handled only a tiny, tiny fraction of his overall legal work.
Of course.
Another coffee boy, apparently.
They're all coffee boys.
They're all
everyone's coffee boys.
Everybody's a coffee boy.
Nobody actually did anything.
Yeah, none of these people ever did anything. Yeah, it's just some guy, whatever. You know, paid off my hookers. And I don't know what the hell, or porn stars or whatever the hell they are. I'm like, I don't, you know, Trump gives this interview today, and then he went and said, and a lot of people were like, whoa. How stupid could he be? He got on Fox and Friends today and actually said that Cohen did represent him in the Stormy Daniels.
Yes, and did a good
job.
Now,
let's understand this, right? He had denied this, right? He has been denying. He had been denying it all through, and now he admitted it on TV, live? Am I right?
It's something like that. And the thing is still going back and forth in terms of who gets to see the documents from the big raid on Cohen as well.
Okay, the special master has been selected. There's a judge called Barbara S. Jones.
There actually is a special master.
Yes, a former federal judge was selected on Thursday to oversee the process of screening materials seized in a recent FBI raid from President Trump's personal lawyer, Michael D. Cohen. You know, so she's going to be, reviewing what the heck. The judge who selected Kimba Wood said that she had asked Ms. Jones how much time she could devote to the special master role. She has committed 90% of her time and perhaps more if needed. OK, Judge Wood said.
Now, Donald Trump submitted a motion, right, that said that his team should be able to see the stuff before anybody.
Those motions were all rejected because it's just absurd. He has tried to do on multiple occasions, and those have been summarily rejected. I mean, it's just
because he was basically trying to make the argument that Donald Trump's lawyers should get to see every single Cohen document before anybody else, and they should be able to decide up front that, no, you can't see that.
I mean, it is the wackiest motion I've ever heard in my life. Look, I mean, these documents were already seized. There was already a warrant. They went out. They got them right now. Okay? I've never heard ever in my life on any document seized or a warrant, oh, let me just give them back to you, Mr. Suspected, Mr. Perhaps Suspected Involved Person, okay? So for you to filter through them and then give me what the hell I
can. Clear, though, your point was clear about you haven't heard of this on warrants. This is what happens on subpoenas. And bringing back the Clinton 2016 email crap, this is the source of a lot of problems. If the FBI had just actually served a search warrant on Hillary Clinton and taken the damn server and looked through the stuff themselves, we would have avoided a lot of problems.
They would have gotten a special master like this that had gone through it, and they would have just separated whatever was private and whatever was then it was fine.
Whereas instead,
when it's a subpoena, it's a different story because the subpoena, you're served and you're the one that's doing the document production, and you just have to turn over whatever the hell they requested.
Of course, we got everybody saying, well, of course, Hillary Clinton deleted 30,000 emails. And who the hell knows whether those were really relevant or not? She, of course, deleted the stuff that was most incriminating. And there's no way to prove that false because she deleted the damn emails, which is one of the reasons she was a moron and an idiot. But looking at the investigation side of things, you know, I also blame the investigators. Like, what they're doing now with a search warrant is the right way to do these kinds of investigations because you eliminate that sort of doubt. However, part of the reason why not is that in order to get a warrant of this type, you already have to have significant cause to believe that there was a crime there.
And they didn't have that in the Clinton case. And they didn't have that with Clinton. That's the problem. Right. And so the thing is that over here, apparently, they think that there is.
Well, because another piece of this that I don't think has gotten enough attention in the conversation about this is part of what was revealed in the search warrant for these for his offices was that they had previously attained warrants to be tapping his phones and his email, and they'd been watching, you know, his phone records and his email boxes for months.
Isn't that great? This is awesome. And then, you know, so, okay, so this whole thing is going on, and then Trump, after this whole thing, decides to go and say, oh, he just never did anything for me. He was just some guy over there. While, actually, there's a story today that I was looking at that apparently that Cohen felt really melancholic that because he was like the guy who was like fixing everything for him, and that apparently the articles on the Wall Street Journal, the headline says, in quotes, "Boss, I miss you so much. The awkward exile of Michael Cohen." Okay, it's just ridiculous. And it says, it said something about how he just felt that that he just felt that Trump was completely ignoring him. You know, you know, it's a, he said, "Boss, I wish you so much. I wish I was down there with you. I really it's really hard for me to be here." It was something about a conversation that apparently he had with Trump. Okay, this guy.
Okay, so next, are we ready for next?
Are we sure?
Yes.
Okay, so I wanted to bring up the McCabe report, which we have not brought up on this show, even though it was, came out a couple weeks ago.
I wasn't here last week, but yeah. So no. The McCabe report basically is saying that, you know, and we talked about this in our Slack, basically that McCabe was, you know, was not truthful in a whole bunch of interviews with different areas. It was the Inspector General, it was the FBI, and there was something else that I forgot. I think it was prosecutors as well.
Mm-hmm.
Investigating the entire Hillary Clinton events surrounding Hillary Clinton. And I think here's the thing about this. What I think about the McCabe report, I think it may be perfectly accurate. I thought that the FBI's behavior surrounding anything around Hillary was done in the right way. But the one thing I still think, like right now, it's just that it seems that this just all got dredged up, like right now, just because Trump wanted to get rid of him.
No, I think they fired him early because Trump wanted to make a point. But this Inspector General report's been making its way through the system, and it was going to come out eventually, no matter what. And the Inspector General in question is a carryover. They're a nonpartisan career person.
I understand that.
I buy it on the timing of when he was fired, not on the timing of the report.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It's the timing of the firing. And that they use this as justification, the fact that this report was coming that wasn't even final.
Yet. Right. I mean, and we talked about the firing a while back. That's sort of old news. The new stuff was the report. And there does seem to be a significant amount there, you know, he may have actually screwed this stuff up.
Oh, I completely agree. I just think, you know, it's just one of these things again where Trump will cloud and make something that could have been probably done properly, perhaps, and make it even like seem improper because he wants something done on his impulse instead of based on the process.
Right. Yeah, I mean, because he wanted to fire McCabe because he didn't like McCabe and because he thought McCabe was a damn Democrat protecting Hillary and after him. And McCabe was one of the people that Comey trusted with the information about what was going on with there. So he wanted him fired for all those reasons.
Right.
The fact that he actually, in fact, did do something wrong and against policy was beside the point. Now, whereas in sort of the normal course of how things are supposed to work, he might have been fired in the end anyway, or he might have retired, or he might have been retired and then had his pension pulled, or some of his pension pulled after the fact. But that process was interrupted. Now, of course, he still disputes the facts, but this is one of those areas where when you talk to Comey, like the interviews with Comey, he's been asked about McCabe and didn't quite say, yeah, he did it and deserves it, but came close. So, I don't know. I mean, apparently, look, the bottom line that we're learning about, you know, the FBI in general is that there are a lot of institutional problems in the FBI. You know, you can talk about the specifics of what, how the Russia investigation was mishandled, how the Clinton investigation was mishandled, and apparently all kinds of other things. There's all this talk about the New York office sort of being rogue and trying to push various things during the campaign as well. There's all kinds of things that seems like the FBI could probably use a good dose of an impartial outside evaluation from top to bottom to try to fix systematic problems. But you're never going to get that in a Trump administration because nobody trusts anybody to to be doing things in a way that's just looking at the professionalism and how this should be run and what makes sense and what doesn't, as opposed to looking at things from a point of view of what's good for me right now.
Right. Yeah. So that's where we are with that. I mean, I don't, and this will keep happening. It's unfortunately until this is over, this kind of stuff.
Yep.
Just like with McCabe. Yeah.
Yvonne, it's your turn again.
excuse me. All right. What about the Hannity real estate thing?
So Hannity. So first of all, I believe we mentioned it turned out to be Hannity was Cohen's third client.
Correct.
And but Hannity said, no big deal. Like, I was never his client. I maybe asked him about a couple real estate deals. And of course, I want that to be confidential. But then, of course, that raised a big question mark over a bunch of people's heads. And some reporters started looking and saying, oh, Hannity does real estate deals. Let's go look into that. And so they've found, they have not yet found any actual specific wrongdoing by Hannity. But with a lot of these things, they're finding connections that look weird. He bought a bunch of property under foreclosure. That, of course, is not a crime.
Right.
But it appears that there's something with the relationship with HUD that it's unclear. Like, and then I don't know. Is there anything to actually see here, or is this just
There's nothing illegal in terms of the real estate deals. Okay, look, he bought he took a lot of money and invested into real estate. I think the whole thing that everybody's pointing out is that it's hypocritical because he was actually taking a substantial dollar amount in HUD subsidies in order to buy projects that were meant for low income people. And so this is the man who rails against big government and blah 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 and all this stuff, and yet had no problem taking millions and millions of dollars in HUD subsidies.
Well, it's fine if the government's giving you money.
Right. Yes. As long as it's to you.
Or just in general to wealthy people, that's fine. It's just when you give it to poor people because they don't deserve it.
They don't deserve it. Right.
But if you're wealthy, you deserve more money.
That's right. Yep. That's apparently his take on this.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay. My next one is the black guys who are arrested for not ordering at Starbucks in Philadelphia.
And fuck that, I gotta be thrown in jail every once in a while, for God's sakes. I mean, what the fuck, man? I mean, seriously, I mean, this is just retarded.
So now, apparently, they were there to meet friends. They sat down. They wanted, they asked for the key to use the bathroom, but were told no because they hadn't ordered something.
It was a code.
Yeah, the code, whatever.
And there's a number. I mean, I've been to a number of Starbucks that have.
Yeah,
code,
yeah.
But you know what? But
here's the thing. The bottom line is, they sat down at the table. They were doing nothing but waiting for their friends. The manager of the Starbucks called 911 and said, "These guys aren't leaving. They're not ordering anything." And so the police came and took them out in handcuffs. And
look, that is one of the most absurd things I've ever seen in my life. So my wife, you know, for years ran a cafe, one of the ones inside Barnes & Noble. Okay?
Okay.
You know, very similar setup to Starbucks. They sell Starbucks drinks. It's not Starbucks. I mean, they just license the drinks.
Right.
And so, but, you know, like my wife told me the policy about people loitering there a lot. Right. And look, what she said is, look, if there's tables available, it's no problem. The only time I'll ever ask anybody to leave is if I've got customers that have bought stuff and they can't find a table and somebody's there and not consuming, not anything, just sitting. I will ask them to give up the space to somebody who is going to sit down and eat.
Right.
Okay. You know, but other than that, I mean, that's it.
Now, and there are a couple, like, it was unclear to me at first, like, did they ask them to leave before calling the cops?
It doesn't seem like it. I have not
much mention of that, but then I saw one reference that they had. And the thing that you just brought up, was it full or not? I don't know the answer to that one either.
Right. I mean, but even that is, I mean, I've never been asked to leave a Starbucks, no matter how full it is.
Well, and the whole point of this was also, like, you know, if this was, you know, a couple white guys in suits.
Oh, they would never have been asked to leave. Oh, absolutely. I'm 100% sure.
Right. And so now so this is ridiculous. Now, on the one hand, if Starbucks had an across the board policy that said, you know, you cannot sit down if you have not made a purchase, period. And they enforced it equally and across the board at all times.
Oh, yeah. Then this is OK. Fine. Yeah, I would understand it. But we all know that that's not true.
Yeah, that's not true. And apparently they do have a policy that says if you're not eating, you can be asked to leave. But if you don't apply it consistently, it becomes unfair. It becomes, you know, yeah, you're acting out against these two black guys that you never would do this if it was two white women sitting there. Right. You know, and now on another note, just like, I don't know about you. I actually do feel guilty. And if I go to a Starbucks and I want to use the bathroom, I make sure I make a small purchase. If I'm going to sit there, I make a small purchase at least. And every once in a while, I'll make another purchase if I feel I've sat there too long. And that's just me. Like, I feel guilty if I go into an establishment and don't purchase at least something, but I use their tables, chairs, facilities, whatever. However, the important part here is I know that's a choice I'm making. Like, I know that I could just go in there and sit if I felt like it, and nobody would say a damn thing.
Right. I agreed. I mean, I think that none of us would feel, I mean, would have ever felt that if we went there and sat there for a while, that it would leave. Now, I obviously, having the experience of my wife, like, I haven't managed one, I would have known that if the place is really crowded and people weren't able to sit down to eat, I mean, I would have thought that something would have happened. But other than that, no.
Now, let me ask what you think about Starbucks' reaction. They're having a day where they're – sometime next month where they're going to close a whole bunch of stores to do training and blah, blah, blah. Is that a bunch of bullshit or is that, like, real?
No, I think I do think that when – in my experience, if you put somebody through a webinar or something or whatever, then they wouldn't give a shit about it. There's a lot of like training right now for people is based on that. And I question the effectiveness of that in general. But I do think that when the company takes,
I've seen, by the way, at least some reports that those kinds of webinar type things are actually counterproductive and result in more of the behavior, not less.
I can believe that.
But they cover the company's ass legally.
Correct. Yeah, so. Because they said that you shouldn't be harassing people or something or whatever.
Right.
So I do think that when you take the time to, because they're shutting down the stores, when you take the action that you're just shutting down all the stores, you're going to pay people to come into the store, your employees, to get trained on this, that definitely gets a lot more attention from employees. I've seen that when you take the time to be specific about something like that and do an action like that, it is far more impactful on employees than sending out an email or a message or to send them out to do a video class like that or so forth.
But now, realistically, though, isn't Starbucks turnover pretty high? I mean, do you even have the same baristas 6 months later?
No, not compared to most retail. No, not really. It's not that high.
My point is, though, like, just judging from Starbucks that I've gone to and how long I see the same people before I see someone else. Yeah, it may be typical for retail, but it's still like 6 months later, you've got a bunch of new people.
Well, the thing is, unless you do this regularly.
Right.
I mean, I think that this is a first action, but listen, the people that did this is the management staff. The management staff there doesn't turn over that quickly.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true.
So, and that's a key target. And so, you know, when you get the managers and the assistant managers, and you make sure that they're on that, and they're the ones that are going to be in the front line really to make a decision on doing something like that, then, you know, you're having the effect that you want. You're bringing attention to something, making it important, and you're putting your checkbook where it matters to make it that people understand it's important. You're not just paying lip service to it. So I think that, you know, it's about the best action that they could take, like right now, given what happened. So.
Okay. Let's take another break and we'll come back and we'll do one more round. Back after this.
This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested, and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show.
Okay, we are back, Yvonne. One last round, two of you and two of me, and that'll be it. So what's your next one?
Oh, what's my next one? Ed posted this thing about the incel concept, which I'd never heard about. What the hell is this incel concept thing? I read a little bit about it this week. It's related to this terror attack, and I'm calling it a terror attack because to me,
the one in Toronto.
In Toronto, where some guy mowed down dozens of people with a fucking car. So what the hell is this thing?
So the tweet storm I saw that talked about this, and this is also, frankly, the first time I heard of this, was from Arshie Mann. The Twitter ID is ARSHYMANN. They are, you know, a journalist on LGBT issues from, I guess they're in Toronto now as well. And so there's a thread that they posted that got tons and tons of retweets and likes and stuff. And I'll just read the first couple of tweets, I guess. For the past little while, I've been working on a piece about Toronto's relationship to the alt-right, especially the manosphere. Unfortunately, that research has become relevant. I'm going to share as much as I can here for people who may not be familiar with these movements. Incel refers to involuntarily celibate, essentially meaning that a person can't get laid because of their looks or personality. The incels make up one segment of the broader manosphere, a collection of online masculinist communities that interplay with one another. I'm skipping a couple here. Self-described incels today are almost entirely men who are laser-focused on their inability to have sex and blame women. Of the manosphere communities, incels are the most virulently misogynistic. Incels have a variety of memes and tropes that they return to constantly, such as Stacy, attractive women who have sex, and Chad, attractive men who have sex. Non-incels are described as normies, and they're derided. Elliot Roger, the Isla Vista shooter, is worshipped as a kind of god. His manifesto is shared and quoted, and he's constantly deployed as a meme. Incels differ in important ways from men's rights activists. While both movements are misogynistic at their core, MRAs deploy a human rights framework to argue men are oppressed. Incels don't talk about rights, they just hate. Let's see. Incel language is
lovely.
Incel language is often explicitly racist, and they can be especially focused on interracial relationships. That element of racial panic is prominent in one of the manifestos. There are a number of online destinations where these folks talk. I'm sort of skimming through this. They play out violent fantasies online. They're talking online about acid attacks and mass rapes. The path to radicalization for incels often starts with the red pill pickup artist communities trying to use the pseudoscientific dehumanizing seduction techniques. They still can't get laid and get infuriated, and that's the path these folks go down.
Jesus Christ, this is scary.
To clarify, the manosphere is a catch-all term that refers to a number of online male communities that overlap, branch off, interface, and oppose each other in complicated ways. It includes pickup artists, men's rights activists, incels, men going their own way, etc. If this guy was an incel and the author of the Facebook post that he was connected to, his attack should probably be described as terrorism, although of the lone wolf variety. Incels have an ideology, and the goal is to terrorize women and normies. Incels in the broader manosphere are an important component of what we've come to think of as the alt-right, depending on your definition. Misogyny is the most common gateway drug to other forms of hate. And then he has some references to some books and articles and learn more. So apparently that's what the incel movement is.
It sounds pretty sick. I mean, in summary, it's a bunch of sickos. I mean,
can't disagree.
Okay, they have taken their rage because for some reason they can't seem to get laid. Well, I can't imagine why they couldn't get laid. They're a bunch of hateful, spiteful jerks. And so, wait, they have no ability to relate to people, and because of that, I guess they want to kill them or rape them.
That's about right. Well, I mean, and look, you can broaden out this. I mean, the profile of sort of the lone wolf murderer is often, like, sometimes in this case, it seems to be directed very much against women. But in general, that lone wolf character is the person who is, for whatever reason, and there are a variety of different reasons, they feel isolated from their community. They feel isolated from the people around them, and they get. And they don't, and they wish they weren't. And so they get increasingly resentful of the fact that, you know, people sort of ignore them or push them away or don't like them.
And the wind in my isolation is
And it becomes a vicious spiral, right?
God, those fucking people. Well, there are ways to fix that problem that don't involve, like, massive amounts of hate and, you know, and murder. It could involve, like, not being a fucking douchebag to start off with.
Well, if your core personality is asshole.
I guess.
Then you end up president of the United States.
Apparently so. God. Jesus Christ. Well, so that's an interesting movement, to say the least. Never heard of that.
Okay.
I'm really appalled that they exist, but okay. All right. Okay. And now we know. All right. So next.
I wanted to bring up Barbara Bush. And for that matter, George H.W. Bush. Barbara Bush passed away this last week. Apparently, she'd been ill for a while and in and out of the hospital, and she made the decision at a certain point that no more sort of heroic intervention, and, you know, that it was time. And so she went home and had her whole family around her and passed away, and we had the whole funeral and a lot of people talking about the history of Barbara Bush. And I guess Barbara and George had been married 74 years, something like that.
Yeah, 70 plus years. Yeah, it's a long, long time.
Long, long time. You know, so
I one of the things that you know, Barbara Bush is somebody that, even though she married a Republican and had conservative people, had her own opinions about many subjects. I mean, she was pro-choice. Was very, very well known about that, and other things that were against, like you know, Republican ideology, and from all accounts, from anybody that had been in contact with her, she was a very caring, kind, and good person. But there are a number of people that really unleashed a lot of vitriol against her for reasons that I'm still, like, confused. Because I found no real justification.
I mean, so the reason some people were saying some negative things about her is they pointed out that in the past she'd made some comments that could be interpreted as racist. I think the one that has come up the most is some comments she made about Hurricane Katrina and the people who were in the stadium during Hurricane Katrina.
That she made a comment how people, like, about the hospitality and so forth and stay, and somehow it got some people you could construe it, and I remember about that. It just seemed like, I mean, this seemed to be like really splitting hairs about it. Look, she to me, in my opinion, if you see her track record, pretty consistently seemed like a very decent person. Okay, so I saw one person that was like giving shit for her because she raised like George W. Bush. I'm like, oh Jesus Christ, really? I'm one. I guess this is me. Look, but even when I saw, for example, they played that damn video that, oh my God, I wish I'd never watched, of when they executed the Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein. All right. I even felt bad about that. I'm sorry. He was, I mean, yes, he was a very hated dictator. There's nothing good I can say about that man. Okay? But on that day, I'm not one that even like at that day, can I go and I go and do a celebratory, woo, we killed the bastard. I'm like, I can't do that. It doesn't feel good to be like, just stop celebrating on top of someone's grave, even if they are the worst person on earth. I just can't do it. I just find it distasteful when other people do.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly agree with everything you've just said there. I mean, as with everybody, she had good bits and bad bits, but you know, mostly she seemed like a decent person.
Yeah.
You know, and the other thing we see there, I mean, George H.W. Bush was in intensive care a couple days after her funeral, you know, and he's out now, still in the hospital, but out of intensive care. You know, he's not doing great either. I mean, they're both they were in their early 90s. I mean, you know, you don't, so we'll see. I mean, it was touching to watch all the ceremonies and everything else like that, and I just thought it was worth noting her passing.
Yeah. No.
Okay, Yvonne, your very last topic of the day.
My last topic of the day. Let's see. Okay, so the North-South Korea, the Korea poll summit thing.
Yeah, so, that, which was actually going on, like, as we started recording the show.
As we started, and of course, is supposedly a prelude to the Trump-Kim Jong-un meeting. And so, I mean, this has been all over the place. Every freaking week, I'm like, okay, I'm just prediction. Is this going to be a massive train wreck?
You think? You don't think that the North and South Koreans will use this opportunity to make peace and let Donald Trump have some credit?
I'm talking about the Trump. I'm talking about when Trump finally meets Kim Jong-un. Is it going to be a massive train wreck? Yay or nay? What's your vote?
I think it'll actually be a big nothing.
You think it's just going to be a big nothing? You don't think it's just going to be a train wreck of epic proportions?
No, I think it's going to be a big nothing. I mean, I think people will expect all kinds of horrible things to come out of it and it to be massively bad. I don't think you're going to get like sort of the diplomatic miracle and oh my God, then, you know, North and South Korea are wonderful going forward forever. But I also, I think in the end, it'll be a lot of hoopla, and the net effect will be essentially zero.
Okay, I hope that it's what you just said, but I really, if you ask me right now on which one to put money on, is that it's going to be an epic train wreck.
Kinds of things do you... Like, when you say epic train wreck, what do you mean? What's actually going to happen?
I mean, something, you know, some kind of, like, real diplomatic meltdown where it's just a massively embarrassing, you know, event in terms of how he behaves, what we find out about it, how pissed off the other guy goes. I mean, I even expect that maybe that, you know, so he goes and does a nuclear test just to fuck with us or something, like, you know, all of a sudden it generates into some stupid insult shouting match that is like beyond embarrassing. You know, something like ridiculous happens, something that is epic in terms of bad things that could happen between a summit in a meeting.
But now there's a difference between embarrassing and something that actually has long term consequences.
Oh no, I'm not talking. I don't think, you know. I just think that it's going to be just epically horrible. In terms of long term consequences, I mean, look, the consequences right now are quite simple. Either they continue with this program or they don't. You know, it seems like also that there was a report this week when Kim Jong-un said that they were suspending like nuclear tests, that it wasn't out of some altruistic reason. Apparently, the network of caves and things that they were using
was ready to collapse.
Actually, apparently already had collapsed substantially. And therefore, it was virtually impossible for them to actually conduct a new test like right now. So they were kind of screwed on that department because of that. I mean, if you ask me which one I would put money on, is that this turns into some epic train wreck that could even have some short-term repercussions, like, you know, in the long term. I would love for it to be, as you mentioned, just maybe they just snooze through it and nothing real happens and nothing changes. That would be my
opinion. I mean, my prediction is that it'll be an epic nothing, but both sides will try to present it as a huge success, actually.
I'm sure.
I'm
a diplomat.
And you're going to have a situation where, you know, Donald, and I mentioned this a couple times in last week's show, but Donald Trump is all about optics. What's actually going on, the underlying facts don't matter. Donald Trump doesn't believe in facts. He believes in appearances. And so all he has to do is go in there, have a meeting, have everybody smile, everybody be happy, maybe make a couple statements about how they're going to reduce this or do that. And whether or not that actually ends up happening in the end is irrelevant. If they can have a statement where everybody looks happy and puts a positive spin on it, Donald Trump is going to declare it to be a great success and say he deserves the Nobel Peace Prize.
To God's sakes.
And as I said last week, if we actually get peace in North Korea out of this, then maybe he does fucking deserve the Nobel Peace Prize.
I tell you what, if he gets North Korea disarmed, okay, look, I'll call the Nobel people to give him the damn thing. Okay, all right, I will do that. I'm okay with that. But like I said, my expectation, the expectation I would put money on is simply that this will be an epic train wreck. That's my thought.
Okay. I'm still unclear on exactly what that means, but,
turns into something like, what I'm saying is, think about whatever the hell – you remember when, George Bush, H.W. Bush went, vomited on the Japanese prime minister?
Yes, I remember that.
Okay. Think about something 10 times worse than that.
Well, because in that particular case, it was embarrassing, but everybody acted professionally and moved on. Nothing.
Correct. Exactly. But think about take that kind of thing and then make it, 30 times worse.
Okay. So it's time for my last topic. And I'd thought about some more serious stuff, but I wanted to go with something else for this last segment. If anybody hasn't seen it, there is a GIF that was posted on Twitter first and then has been passed around of Comet 67P, which is the one that the space probe Rosetta visited a couple years back.
Yeah. I saw that.
But basically, an amateur. Took a lot of the images that were publicly released years ago at this point, back in 2016 to be specific, and did some processing and put them together in an animation. So it looks like you're sort of flying by a cliffside on the surface of the comet during a snowstorm with you can see the stars moving in the background as well. And it just looks incredible. So if you want to go look for this thing, obviously we can't show you the picture in the podcast, but the guy's Twitter handle is Landru79, LANDRU79. He's got the GIF posted there. If you prefer, I linked to an article off my Twitter that you can find from Live Science by Rafi Letzer. So it's on livescience.com, posted April 24th, 2018, that shows the image, but also has a detailed explanation of how it was made, exactly what it's of. But the key to it is that, it looks like, this is an alien world. This is a surface of a comet, but you can imagine being there because it looks like it looks 3D-ish. It looks
awesome.
There's movement. You see the snowstorm. It looks like a real place, not just some, abstract photo. It really looks like it. This is a real place. You could go there. You could visit there. And there's motion and stuff happening. Now, to be fair, the motion was sped up quite a bit. It's like, I think the original thing was 25 minutes worth compressed down into 1 second or 1.5 seconds or something like that. But it's really cool. Go look at it if you haven't seen it already. And that's sort of your moment of space for this week's podcast and a short final topic from me. And I'll save the rest for next time we do a lightning round.
And this concludes Curmudgeon's Corner for what day is it?
April 27th.
Friday, April 27th.
Do you want to do
2018?
There you go. You want to do the rest of the closing, Yvonne?
You can reach us at Ablesme, ABULSME, or at IMBO, BOU.
Those are Twitter.
That's a Twitter. We really appreciate feedback as well. Feedback goes to, where the hell does it go?
feedback at curmudgeons-corner.com will get to both of us.
Yes, and that's a good thing to do.
You can see Yvonne is well practiced at this part of the show.
And thanks everybody, and
Facebook and Patreon, Yvonne.
Oh, Facebook and Patreon. No, I don't remember those parts. You got to cover it.
Go to facebook.com/curmudgeonscorner. Give us comments, thoughts, etc. You know, the feedback gets emailed straight to us. But if you want to be part of a public conversation, do it on Facebook and let us know what you think. Give us suggestions. Share with your friends so that they'll listen to the show, too. And if you really like the show, patreon.com/curmudgeonscorner. You can throw us a buck here or there. For $2 a month, you'll get access to our Curmudgeon's Corner Slack, where we talk about the issues of the day all week long. This week, as a highlight, you would have gotten a blow-by-blow description of a workplace injury I suffered. And for those of you who don't know, I have a white-collar job. I was at a meeting in a conference room, but ended up with a bloody finger. Very exciting.
This is not the end of the podcast.
No, it is.
One last topic.
No.
Your finger.
I hurt my finger as part of a handshake where somebody shook my hand vigorously over the table, but there was one of these little table stands with instructions on how to use the conference room equipment that's like this plastic stuff, and he shoved my hand down onto the corner of that, and it basically sliced off a chunk of skin, and it just sort of oozed blood throughout the rest of the meeting. It was fun.
It's so lovely. Anyway.
Anyway, that's it. Thanks, everybody.
No, that's not a topic. That's a super duper 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 bubble lightning round.
Yep, and that's the end. So thank you for joining us for Curmudgeon's Corner.
Put on your head.
We appreciate it. We'll have a great week, everybody.
Don't do that. He's
bye.
We'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Matthew with luggage arms. Don't do it.